1320 WILS. Great to have you here. So dating nowadays is a complicated business, but online dating can be even more so. Let's talk to one of the country's foremost experts on this topic, Dr. Helen Fisher with us, a biological anthropologist, a senior research fellow with the Kinsey Institute, and also the chief scientific advisor at Match.com. Dr. Fisher, great to have you on WILS.
I'm delighted to be with you.
Yeah, how'd you end up hooking up with Match.com?
They called me in 2005, about 2 days before Christmas. I got a phone call, and that's amazing in New York City that anybody wants to talk to you 2 days before Christmas. Mm-hmm. They wanted me to come in 2 days after Christmas, and I met with all of them, and in the middle of the morning, they asked me, why do you fall in love with one person rather than another? And that's what I've been working on for many years.
Okay. Oh, so what is it they really wanted you to do for the site itself?
Well, the first thing that they wanted me to do is create a questionnaire for a new site of theirs called chemistry.com, mm-hmm. which I did. And then what I did, and that's I created the first questionnaire in the world, actually, that's based on brain circuitry, and was able to find natural patterns of, you know, when people will say, we have chemistry or we don't have chemistry, mm-hmm. I began to understand what they're talking about. But anyway, more recently, they started with me something called Singles in America, and it's a national study that we do every year. We do not poll the match population. We poll the American population.
Okay.
So it's a representative sample of Americans based on the U.S. Census. And every year I ask about 200 questions. Mm-hmm. And in August we assemble them, and then we collect the data through the Internet.
And you've come up with some interesting conclusions, especially about lying on dates. I'm curious, though, when you said you focus on chemistry, is there any kind of a secret to what chemistry is really all about?
Well, absolutely. People who are very expressive of the dopamine system in the brain tend to be novelty-seeking, risk-taking, curious, creative, spontaneous, and energetic, and they go for people like themselves.
Mm-hmm.
People who are very expressive of the traits in the serotonin system, somebody like Mitt Romney and Ann Romney, they're traditional, conventional, follow-the-rules, like schedules, concrete thinkers, more religious. They also go for people like themselves. But in the other two cases, people who are very expressive of the testosterone system go for those who are expressive of the traits in the estrogen system and the reverse. Yeah, Bill and Hillary Clinton are a good example, but I think Hillary is a good example of the high testosterone style, the analytical, logical, direct, decisive, tough-minded.
Mm-hmm.
Falling in love with Bill, who's, I think, more estrogen. You know, he cries easily. The whole world knows he can't stop talking. He's got a lot of people skills. He thinks contextually. As a matter of fact, we've often been wondering, you know, when we're going to have our first female president. I actually think we've had one with Bill Clinton.
Hmm. Because you said one thing Match.com asked you about is why we fall in love with one person. And you talk about someone like Bill and Hillary. It seems like they've had a complicated relationship. Do you really believe it's just one person we fall in love with? Or?
No, I think during the course of your life, you can fall in love with a lot of different people.
Hmm.
I don't think there's any one soulmate. In fact, you know, I'm an anthropologist, and when you look in hunting and gathering societies, people tended to have two or three spouses during the course of their lives, what mm-hmm. I call serial pair bonding, a series of partners. So that seems to be very natural, but over 50% of people in America do sustain a lifelong pair mm-hmm. bond. So, you know, we're 97% of mammals do not pair up to rear their young people do, and so... Actually, I've put over 100 people into a brain scanner to study what happens in the brain when you fall in love and when you feel real real attachment. So
they are
our brain circuits, too.
And
when you love.
That lasts only for so long, though, right? That kind of.
Well, you know, it doesn't have to if you pick the right person. We put 17 people in their 50s and 60s into the brain scanner.
Mm-hmm.
They came into the lab saying they were still madly in love with their partner. They were all married. Most of them had adult children by then,
mm-hmm.
and it's hard to believe that you know that they are really still in love. But in fact, we proved in the brain that they are. Yes.
So does it take the serotonin type? You said the Romneys are a serotonin type couple. Is that the kind of couple that can make it for a lifetime? Or?
I haven't studied that yet. All this is very new material, but I think that even the very high dopamine, risk-taking, novelty-seeking kind, who is curious and creative, can be very excited when they find somebody who wants to go climb Mount Everest with them and bring the child with them and do whatever they do. I mean, you got to find the right person, and I think you can make the right kind of relationship. But anyway, back to lying.
That's what I want to get to. By the way, we're talking to Dr. Helen Fisher. She's the chief scientific advisor at Match.com. And you're listening to 1320 WILS. So, yeah, you asked about lying. How often is that happening between on first dates specifically?
Well, we wanted to know, and so we did a special study of it this year. We've got data now on over 10,000 people, and 57% of singles say they never tell a white lie when they're dating. That leaves 43% of people who do.
So almost 60%. Do you believe that? Are they maybe they're lying to the pollsters?
Well, 57% say they do not lie, and 43% say they do lie. Do I believe it? When you study how people make polls, one of the finest ways is through the Internet. You find people lying a lot less on the Internet than if you call them on the phone and their spouse is standing next to them. So it's the data that we've got. There's three ways you can answer a questionnaire: with who you really are, with who you want to be, and who you want others to think you are. So it's never perfect, but it's better than nothing.
So the majority do not lie. Why is that? What are they just they're confident that nothing will turn off the potential partner?
Well, what's really interesting is when we cross-tabbed this with a lot of other things, we found that lying does not get you a date. Lying does not get you more sex. And lying does not get you from the first date to the second date. So somehow these people have begun to figure out that it doesn't get what you're looking for. But we do know what they lie about, and that makes some sense, actually.
Okay. Now, what when people lie on their dates, what are they typically lying about?
Well, the top thing that they will lie about is if somebody asks them how many sex partners they've had. 24% of men and women, both. Exactly the same number, lie about how many sex partners they've had in the past. Mm-hmm. Women always decrease it. They always say fewer than they've had. And we didn't find any data to the opposite of that.
Is that a smart thing to do, by the way?
I'm not in the smart thing business, you know. I mean, I'm not in the should business, but...
Do men tend to be turned off if the number's too high, that kind of thing?
What's amazing is that men aren't bothered by the fact that women, I mean, this is not from this data, but from other Singles in America data with Match, men are fine with women having had a lot of sex partners. They've changed their attitude about that. You know, in the past, a woman had to really be the seed for a man's, a vessel for a man's seed and pass his DNA on. These days, women have their own, careers, and they choose who they want, and both men and women are much more relaxed about sex than in the last 10,000 years, actually.
What about the men? Yeah, what are they up to?
Well, men equally increase and brag about how many sex partners they've had, or they decrease it. And I think those are two different reproductive strategies. If they're bragging and increasing it, they're probably trying to, display their sexual prowess. Oh, come to me, I'm good in bed, that sort of thing. People like me. And I think when they're decreasing it, I think they're saying, look, I'm a person who can love, and I'm not going to cheat on you. So men seem to pick both strategies. Women only decrease it.
I'm trying to do women, is that in any way attractive for a woman to hear that a man's had a lot of sex partners?
Well, it isn't for me. On the other hand, these days you don't want a man who's had none, particularly if he's in his 40s or 50s, because you wonder what he's been doing with his life. So I think that one has, basically, I don't think people should ask, to be honest with you. And I think if
really?
They do ask...
Really? They should leave that alone completely, huh?
I would. How about you?
I think that, you want to get a general number. You can get, say, over 10 or less than 10. How about that strategy? Is that...
Well, I don't know. I just don't think it's anybody's business. And I think that my assumption personally is that they're going to lie to me, so why should I ask?
I think that's... Now, what else, other than sex, is there any other issue that you found out?
Oh, yeah. Men lie about their finances and their jobs. And I think that's a very evolutionary strategy. I think that was 4 million years ago, whenever we evolved language, which is probably 500,000 years ago, men were lying about their resources, although it was a little hard on the grasslands of Africa. But I think the reason men do lie about their jobs and their resources, their finances, is that for millions of years, women wanted a man who could help them raise their babies. Women want a man who's got a job and who can help financially. And so men will lie about that. Women lie about their weight. And I think that's equally Darwinian evolutionary.
How does that make sense? Isn't that typically visible?
Well, you certainly think so.
Yeah. They drop. I'm trying to imagine a man even asking about weight. That's definitely a question not to ask about, right?
Well, you would certainly think so. I wouldn't even ask about men's money, although women want to know, and men probably want to know. But I mean, I think you can look at a woman and
get a
pretty
sense
clear
of
idea.
It. Yeah, well,
but what's important, the reason they're lying about their money from an evolutionary perspective, they don't know that. But the more overweight you are or the more underweight you are, the harder it is to get pregnant, the more likely you are to have a miscarriage, the more likely you are to conceive later, and the more likely you are to suffer from chronic diseases like diabetes and heart disease and even certain kinds of cancer and hypertension. So these are evolutionary strategies. I would guess that if we did the same study in China or Mongolia or in highlands of New Guinea, men might still lie about their finances, and women would still lie about their weight.
Dr. Fisher, do you believe that the online dating in general has made us objectify each other more than in the past?
You know, I don't think it makes any difference at all where you met somebody. I really don't. You know, I mean, you know, I work with Match, and I've got various algorithms. We can give you somebody from the same, you know, background and lives nearby and is the right ethnic group for you and the amount of education. But the only real algorithm is your own brain. You've got to meet the person, sit down with them, then your ancient human brain clicks into action. You smile the way you always did. You flirt the way you always did. Mm-hmm. You assemble data. You parade the way you always did. The only real algorithm is your own brain. So I don't think it makes any difference where you meet somebody. I think mankind's always been lying. It's not about honesty. It's about winning. And all kinds of people are inclined to try to press the truth here and there in order to get that first date. Then, of course, if you have been lying, you're going to get caught. As a matter of fact, we found out that 27% of men had been busted for a lie once they got on a date through social media. The person had looked at them up in social media and discovered that they were lying.
What's really happening.
Same thing with women.
I'm just curious. One last thing. When it comes to the larger effect, do you think it's taken some of the romance, though, out of relationships, out of this feeling like, wow, this is a real special thing that's happened when people are perusing through, hundreds of thousands of pictures of other potential partners?
It doesn't matter. It simply doesn't matter. I mean, the bottom line is people get cognitive overload. That's the only real problem I see with internet dating, is you have so many choices that you end up choosing none. And that's a problem. So one of the things I say to singles is, after you've met 9 people, stop and get to know one of them better. The more you get to know somebody, the more you like them, the more you think that they're like you. Mm-hmm. So it's cognitive overload that is the problem, that we just, we are not used for millions of years. We didn't have that many choices. But in terms of love, hardly is it a bad idea. You know, more and more people are in fact, when we ask, where did you meet your last first date, 40% of singles say on the internet, whereas only 25% say through a friend. It's good for older people. I'm too old. I'm not going to sit in a bar all night and hope something comes along. It's good for when you move to other places. It's good when, most people know their own social circle. They need to reach out to other people, and this is giving them a good opportunity. It's easy. It's cheap. And so far, it's been very successful for a lot of people. It does take work, no question about it. You've got to spend the time to do it. But you've got to spend a lot of time in courtship in a bar, too. So, as I say, it doesn't make any difference as far as I'm concerned where you meet the person. It's when you meet the person in person that you begin the real courtship rituals.
Biological anthropologist Dr. Helen Fisher. She is the chief scientific advisor also at Match.com. Dr. Fisher, it's been enlightening. Thank you very much for joining us on WILS.
And thank you.
And that is it for us. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS. Thanks so much for joining us. We will be right back here on Monday at 6 p.m. Join us then right here on more compelling talk radio, 1320 WILS.